Penn State football has wrapped up its class of 2023 recruiting efforts. I am Nate Bauer. I'm going to be joined by Sean Fitz today. This is the Blue White Illustrated Daily Edition.
Hello, Nate.
Hi, Sean. Hi.
How's it
How
going?
How are you?
I'm going great. I'm doing much, much better than the basketball team did last night, which is to
oh
say,
no.
Yeah, no, I started there and I'm sorry. And I know this is not the basketball podcast, but played number one Purdue last night. It was not pretty. And you see what happens when somebody gets hot, even if it's not the 7'4" guy who is bigger than anyone I've ever seen, really. Yeah, he's something. But Purdue put it to him last night.
Yeah, it was not a great showing for Penn State. It was kind of a combination of things, right? Because they had to play well, right? No matter what, no matter how Purdue played, Penn State had to play well, and Penn State didn't. So that was the first half of the equation. And then the second half was Purdue just Mason Gillis went nuts, like actually nuts, like off the reservation, just complete dominance. Made 9 3-pointers. He had an 11-0 run himself to start the second half. So when that happens, you know, sometimes it's just not your night. Micah Shrewsbury was interviewed after the game, and you know, the quote that got me is he was like, "You got to do something, right? Like you got to do something you got to pick who you're going to defend on this Purdue team, because you cannot leave Zach Edey by himself in the paint or he will absolutely bludgeon you." So, you know, pick your poison. Penn State picked it. Was not a successful choice for Penn State. I thought it was a great headline. Nobody commented on it. Did you see it?
Sorry. No, I didn't read it.
The headline was picking poison. Penn State croaks at number one Purdue.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's
at least you didn't use the word route in it. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I didn't say route.
How many of those guys did Shrews recruit on that team?
On Purdue's team?
Yes.
I don't know. Quite a few. He was a big part of it. It was funny. He, at the end of the game, I saw him, you never get to see exactly what you want to see on TV, right? The camera always does something else from what you want. I wanted to watch him walk through the post-game handshake line, and he dipped out. Like he left the handshake line. So Adam Fisher was the first coach to go through the handshake line. And I was like, oh my goodness, did he bail on the post-game handshake? Would he do that? And what you ended up seeing at the end was he dipped out so that he could go to the end of the line and spend more time with everybody, right? So the Matt Painter, the entirety of that coaching staff and all those players. So just if you, I like to browse opponent message boards sometimes, see what they're talking about, see what they say. And universally, the reaction on Purdue's board was like, what a class act. This guy's so great. They love Micah Shrewsbury. And the sentiment that came through was Notre Dame would be so smart to hire this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I don't cover basketball, so I kind of separate myself from that. And I really like Micah Shrewsbury, just in terms of being a former basketball guy myself, watching like how he coaches them and how he's getting, and last night was a terrible example, but how he gets the most out of what he's putting out there on the floor is, you know, something you don't always get. And yeah, I agree. It's going to be tough for Penn State to hold on to him because he is such a great teacher and coach and guy that seems to get everything. And you get that, you know, from his background, the guys that he's been around, he's absorbed a lot of that. And yeah, he's a really good coach. I really enjoy watching his teams, and I cannot always say that about Penn State basketball.
Life is a series of choices, Fitz. Penn State can choose whatever it wants to be as a basketball program. And so if Micah Shrewsbury and his staff and the direction that they want to take this are prioritized and given the amount of resources that it takes to compete in the Big Ten, I don't really have any question that Micah Shrewsbury would stick around for that. That Micah Shrewsbury is a guy who could withstand being offered other positions and stay with Penn State, but you got to be able to compete. And certainly I have detailed through the years the many, many ways that Penn State needs to take strides.
And that's a conversation
in that category.
We've had a conversation like that in the last couple of years regarding football. And last year with the latest extension for James Franklin, we had talked about the things that were not involved in the print that is available to us in terms of the contract, the numbers of years, all that kind of stuff, is the dedication. And Penn State basketball obviously behind in that regard, but Penn State football continues to catch up and, you know, is adding positions, is making changes where you just don't necessarily think there are going to be changes made, but in the name of improvement, in the name of, hey, we've got this ability to do things now. And that has not always been the case. So curious to see what Pat Kraft does in terms of the dedication to that program. He's not going to build a sustainable winner. Like, this is Penn State basketball. This is different, but you can build something where you can be respectable and be a contender every so often. I think, you know, it's a very, very tough place to play, to win consistently. And I don't mean to sound too down, but like if the dedication is there, if the resources are there, you can do that. We've seen programs that have done that.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of, you brought up Franklin and contracts and things getting done and commitments. There are things happening.
We are going to talk football. Yes.
We are going to talk football. I don't want to speak out of turn, but, you know, facilities wise, these are things that don't even necessarily come to the forefront. But there are things happening. I'm just going to tease it and allude to it. Things are happening, structure facility wise, not necessarily even with Penn State football, as much as it is resources being provided to other sports that will free up Penn State's football facilities, which is a step in the positive direction for Penn State, football. Shrine Bowl, the thing everybody wants to talk about. It's here. It's finally here. Finally,
we got the all Rose Bowl out of the way so we could get to the Shrine Bowl. That is fantastic. Well,
we had to get through the NFLPA Bowl as well, which was also at the forefront of attention. But no, Penn State has a couple of guys in the Shrine Bowl. That is tonight, February 2nd, Thursday. It's an 8:30 kick, I believe, in Las Vegas. It'll be on the NFL Network. And Juice Scruggs and Mitch Tinsley are both playing in that game. And, you know, for what it's worth, have really gotten quite a bit of positive momentum, positive feedback, positive reviews for the people who are kind of there. I'm not a draft guy. That's not my thing. But if you look for some of the reactions from people who are there in Las Vegas this week and who have checked out those practices, they have been very, very glowing. First, certainly for Juice Scruggs, who has always been a part of that game. That was in his postseason plans. But also for Mitch Tinsley, who was a late add. Tinsley actually participated in the NFLPA Bowl at the Rose Bowl last weekend and was one of two players to be added after that. Like, stuff had already started with the Shrine Bowl when Tinsley was added to the roster. So should be interesting to see him get another crack at showing his stuff for scouts. Catches the ball. That's the main, right? If you his route running has been excellent this week, according to those onlookers, and really has had an excellent showing. Just again, catching the football. So we'll see. Right. We'll see what he does.
And that's what he's done so well. You know, at Penn State is like, yes, his numbers dipped because he was not playing in an offense that was going to get him 90 catches. And I think that that's the biggest thing is when you look at his production on a numbers basis, like you would think he took a step back this year, but you know, he's a pretty quality player. Would have liked to seen a little bit more in the big play aspect of it, but like, he's not going to the NFL to be a big play guy. He's going there to be a Deshaun Hamilton type guy, play all over the field, run good routes, get open type things. So I'm excited to see him, and like, his competitive nature took over. Like, he was not supposed to be in this game. He performed well last week or 2 weeks ago, whichever one was the NFLPA bowl. And then, you know, to come in on short notice and do what he's done is going to catch the eye of some scouts. It's going to catch the eye of draft people. And I think he's really helped himself in the last couple of weeks. The guy I want to talk about is Juice Scruggs, because we're going to spend this 2023 offseason talking about Penn State football and what Penn State needs to do to get to the next level, to be a championship contender and everything like that. One thing we're probably not going to talk about enough, or we haven't talked about enough, is Penn State's going to miss Juice Scruggs a lot. Like, yeah, he was very good this year. And I know they would have loved to have him back for another year. It's just not in the cards, you know, with the eligibility, the COVID year, all that kind of stuff. He's ready to move on, and I don't blame him because he's been here for a while. But Juice was excellent at times this year, very good, I think, at his floor. And, you know, they're going to have to replace him. Hunter Norzad's going to move into center. That's not going to be a seamless transition. You know, if they had Juice Scruggs back next year, they would feel really, really good about where they're at. But as for now, they'll take what they've got and feel pretty good about what they've got. So I don't think we're going to be able to vocalize how much Juice Scruggs is going to be missed, because he's a really good player.
Yeah, and you didn't see issues, right? I mean, the best center is the one that you don't necessarily notice all the time. And I think certainly that could be said to his credit this season. Hunter Norzad's interesting to me, just because this will be now, obviously he took reps and practiced a lot of this year as a backup center. So right. It's not as though this is going to be a totally new thing for Hunter Norzad, but coming from his college career prior to Penn State, it will represent really the second big position change from where he had been previously.
Right. And he's, you know, he was a tackle, then he was a guard. Now he's going to be a center. That's fine. I mean, that versatility is awesome. He's going to, I think, use this offseason to get health. Like, that guy got banged up early, yeah, and just, yeah, he, to his credit, like, just marched through it. Yep. And I can't imagine that was easy. So he gets fixed up this offseason. He'll be okay. It's a high bar to go in and try and replace Juice Scruggs, because, you know, like you mentioned, he's a guy we didn't talk about for a reason, because he was solid. Like, he was right there doing his job. And, you know, we focus on the guy that gets past the outside guy, the tackle or whatever, to get to the quarterback. You don't really think about the center, but Juice Scruggs graded out as the top lineman, won the top lineman award for a reason, or I think he was right there with Olu. I mean, I don't know what his draft prospects look like. He's probably a late day two guy, maybe early day three guy, because he is an interior lineman. But there's a lot to like about Juice Scruggs. And like I said, we're not going to talk enough about how much Penn State's going to miss him this offseason.
Yeah, and certainly a guy who has, from when he first got to Penn State to now, has been through some stuff. So good on him for, you know, maximizing, and we'll see what happens with him.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Class of 2023. It's in the books. Is it in the books? It's in the books.
It's in the books. Yes, it's in the books. You're going to clock out now. Penn State.
See you later, guys.
All right. Penn State's class of 2023, all 23 of them. 14th nationally in the on-three rankings. Signed Chimney Ono yesterday. The finishing piece was a good one. And I think it's indicative of things clicking on the offensive side of the ball. You have the top tight end class in the Big Ten, top offensive line class in the Big Ten. Last year, you had the top quarterback class and running back class in the country, or right up there in the country. Still need more weapons on the outside. Wide receiver last year was a big class. This year, they just brought in Carmelo Taylor. So when we talk about stacking classes, you look for those holes in certain areas, and you need in 2024 to figure out what you're going to do at receiver, because that's going to be such a big position. You need some game changers, and, you know, sometimes they have them, sometimes they don't. When you have them, it's a heck of a lot easier to move an offense. Defensively, another really good solid class. I will say, I look at the numbers and I look at the guys and how long it's going to take them to get ready to where they need to get where they need to be. Defensive line, a bit of a concern. That's something they're going to have to address in 2024 and in the portal. I don't think there's any doubt Penn State will be looking at tackle in the springtime into next year, because I think this year they can hold up okay. They're going to have some guys move on after the season. So it's going to be interesting to see which direction that goes to, because if you look at the last couple of classes, the numbers aren't huge. Different body types, different guys that, you know, you're taking more projects on the outside, like Joseph Mupoy. We saw them take talent. You know, there are guys in the last couple of classes that are going to take a little bit longer to get where they need to be. Now, maybe Mason Robinson comes in, is a little bit earlier, redshirt freshman, sophomore, something like that, and is one of those guys. But just looking at that defensive line and comparing it to what they got at linebacker this year, which is an excellent linebacker class, and what they've gotten in the secondary in the last several cycles, I think there's a noticeable drop off. So receiver and defensive tackle, two of the top portal targets for Penn State, are also going to be high priorities in the class of 2024. Not that they aren't ever top priorities, because they're such important positions, but those two just kind of stick out. And when you take 2022 and 2023 and put them beside each other, you see, you know, parallels in certain positions and then ups and downs in others.
Is just sticking with the defensive line for a minute, is Chop a concern for them? Like, is he an early entry kind of guy, do you think? Is that something that they have to consider? Like, what's the urgency there? Because certainly Adisa Isaac is a guy who you would assume will move on. I believe Adisa would have another year with the COVID year after this season if he wanted it, but certainly you would have to think that both of those guys could be moving on after this season.
Right. With a productive year, Chop's going to like look at that pretty heavily. I feel confident in that. Adisa already has looked, and I think he's in that situation kind of like Juice, where he does have that extra year, but probably not going to use it because he has a pro career to move on to. You got denied Dennis Sutton there. I'm really interested to see what Zariah Fisher brings to the table there at defensive end. But yeah, I think that it's such an important position that you're going to be looking, like on the offensive line, you're going to be looking defensive end, defensive tackle every year in the portal, whether you get something or whether there's something out there worth fitting into the puzzle that you've put together already. That remains to be seen, but I think Penn State's going to have to move in that direction. Really, really like what they bring back at edge this year. But as we've seen in college football, like all it takes is 1 year for a position room to kind of flip in that direction. So we're going to see, in 2024, what 2024 brings. But yeah, Chop is a pro prospect. He's a guy that they feel strongly about, that he can be an early round pick. It's just a matter of getting the right production, getting the right size, and, you know, making the gains that he needs to make to get where he needs to be.
Before we move on from Chimney's signing on Wednesday, what's can you Cliff's Notes the version there, like how that came to be, why sign late, what was the story there on him joining the program?
So Chimney was committed to Old Dominion early. Like, this is not a guy that went out and ran the camp scene or did really anything like that. He went to Old Dominion's camp. They worked him out. They think, hey, we might have a gem here, offered him. And I believe he committed September 1st. So didn't get any senior film out or anything like that before he committed. Old Dominion was tickled to have him. I've talked to some of the guys down there and they thought, well, this guy, I don't want to say he was better than Old Dominion, but they knew that other schools would come calling if other schools found out about him. Other schools eventually did find out about him. Rutgers was very much in this and very much in the picture to sign him in December. Penn State went down during that December window. Phil Troutwine watched him practice basketball, watched, dunk and things like that, and said, okay, he's got a lot of the tools that we're looking for. Like I said, I keep saying this about Chimney, just based off of the feedback that I've gotten, he's probably a 2 or 3 year project in terms of catching up to the speed of the game, catching up to the nutrition, catching up to the weight program and everything like that. So once they decided, okay, this guy is worth taking a flyer on, then they went all in, offered a couple days after he decommitted from Old Dominion. And at that point, this kid didn't know anything about recruiting. So Michigan State comes in, Ole Miss comes in, Rutgers was there, Penn State, of course, being the dominant program in his region, comes in, and it's going to make you pause and think. Like I said, Rutgers really, really tried to get him to sign in the early signing period, and he just decided that now was his time to go through the process. So he did that, and Penn State won out. This was not one that was really ever in the bag until late, because you know, you heard whispers of NIL. You know, he's not a kid that comes from a ton, so you heard whispers of NIL, especially with Michigan State and Ole Miss involved. But all things equal, I think Penn State was the place that really made the most sense for him. And he signed on Wednesday afternoon. Glad to have Ryan Snyder down there for that, for the live stream. I know a lot of people signed on the live stream, so we appreciate that. And speaking of which, if you're watching here on YouTube, like the video, subscribe to the channel, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was a good close. I mean, you look at what they did last year with Vega Yone, and same result. You get a guy that you think can play in your offensive line room. Polar opposites. I mean, Vega was like almost ready, like, because he is giant, you know, 6'5" plus, 330, just square, a light 330, as they tell me. Chimney's 6'5", 270, and he looks skinnier than that when you get beside him. So polar opposites in terms of like rawness and all that kind of stuff, but the same result in that you went out and you found a guy in the second signing period where values are higher. Like, this guy, if he doesn't sign in December, this is a generality, if he doesn't sign in December, schools are going to place a higher value on him for the January, February period. So Penn State was able to secure a couple of guys, albeit on different paths. And it's a really good job. Like, it's not easy to do that. And they also, one thing that we probably didn't talk about in January, they also caught themselves in terms of, like, there were some receivers out there that could they play at Penn State? Maybe, but also maybe not, probably not. And they caught themselves with some of those evaluations and kind of took a step back from several prospects in the January period. It helps to get Malik McClain to take some of that blow off and take some of that urgency for a wide receiver. But Penn State backed up on those guys, went all in on Ono, and this is the result.
Is obviously James Franklin said in December, during the December signing period, he you know, plotted out the list of positions that they were still looking at, be it through the transfer portal or in recruiting. And obviously tackle was one of them. Does this resolve that, or do you foresee them still pursuing someone in the transfer portal for more immediate help?
I see them going to the transfer portal for an offensive lineman anytime they can, not just because these guys are not ready and the younger guys are not ready. You can add a college ready guy like that's been in a strength program for a couple of years. It's going to be a tough sell. Don't get me wrong, because you've got three tackle starters coming back and guys that have started in the interior. So there's not a lot to sell for Penn State at this point, but you need bodies, and you need bodies that are ready to go. I mean, we watched this offensive line just get thrown together in November, and that's when you need that guy. That's when you need your seventh or eighth offensive lineman. And I think that's why they will look at that. And every portal season, offensive line is going to end up on there. They offered a couple of guys. Ajani Cornelius was not coming here to be the third or fourth tackle. Like, that's just how that works. Like, he was a guy that was so prioritized by several schools because offensive tackle, there's a dearth of offensive tackles out there. You're not going to, you know, every school, like we sit here and look at Penn State every day and say, Penn State has had so much trouble developing offensive tackles, while not realizing that 80% of the other schools out there are in the same boat, just because there aren't too many of these guys walking around. So that's kind of where it is with the portal in terms of selling a guy. You've got Olu coming, or once Olu came back, like no chance, essentially no chance. Yep. Drew Shelton started the last part of the season. You're getting Caden Wallace back, which became apparent late in the season as reported by Ryan Snyder. So it was one of those situations where it's just such a tough sell, but you're still going to try and go out and find those guys. And you know what? Maybe you bring in a guy that's been in a D1 program as a walk-on. Like, you're looking to add numbers because, you know, you need, I'm not saying you need scout team players, but you need guys that you can fill into that that ladder of offensive line talent while you wait for your young guys to develop. And at the same time, I mean, Malik McNeil was on campus for, what, 4 months, something like that? Like, this is a position with a high volatility rate. Like, if you get half of the guys to develop, you're feeling pretty good about the group that you brought in. So they just brought in four guys in this class, maybe five if you include Mega Barnwell. If you get quality starters out of two, maybe three of these guys, that's a good hit rate in the class.
Very much so. Very much so.
Did I exhaust you?
I'm just trying to process all of it. It's just it's recruiting. It's a whole different animal. You want to do a lightning round, right?
I want to do a lightning round.
Well, let's do a lightning round. So we're stacking, we're comparing the 2022 class to the 2023 class. Is that correct? Yeah.
Some of them by position. By position.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's start with one of the more difficult ones to decide on. Quarterback. What was 2022? I'm just kidding. It's just a joke.
That's very good. That's very good.
Yeah. You know, what do you got?
Have me there for a second. Quarter. I mean, you're going to go 2022. Bringing those two guys in. Jackson Smolak, I think, is a good, a good prospect, a guy that can be a productive college quarterback. But like Drew Aller and Bo Prabhuler are your 1 and 2 next year, and that's a year into their career for both of them. You're probably feeling pretty good about that. Christian Veyer is at Pitt because of the class that they brought in 2022. So let's not spend too much time. I know. I think you would pick 2022 as well. That's how easy this choice was.
I would. You should ask me the next one.
Okay. How about running back, Nate?
2022. Let's move on.
All right.
No, I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah. Nick there were no running backs from Berks
County. Catron Allen.
2023. So.
Yeah. If it doesn't involve a Berks County running back, I'm just not interested. But long term, what's the projection for the two guys that they did bring in at that position in this class?
Yeah, Wallace, they might need right away. Like if they don't add another guy in the portal in May, then they're going to look to him to potentially be a guy. It's just going to be so hard because those first two guys, and I know injuries happen and things like that, but those first two guys are so much better than whatever you're going to trot out there as your third guy that, it really changes some things and changes the math and changes your ability to try and bring in a guy. Like it'd be nice to have a guy like John Lovett that would come in and you know, be in this role or you know, even a Devin Ford or something like that, like to be a guy that would fulfill a role, to have a role on the team. Cam Wallace might be that guy. London Montgomery, of course, is going to be a guy that has to rehab before we can really say definitively like how that one's going to play out. So yes, there is 1-2, and then there's a big gap, which you would like to fill with a portal guy or somebody transfer, you know, whatever. And then there's those two freshmen. So it's not like the third guy is going to come in and be a dude right away.
Yeah. T-Frank's telling us that London actually agreed to join the show. So he should be able to provide a little bit of an update on where he's at, in the coming week or so. Offensive line. You just touched on it a little bit, but certainly a pretty big and important class, for them this year.
Yeah, I'm going to lean 2023, even though I like the 2022 duo of Shelton and Vega Ione. And of course, you can throw JB Nelson in there as well as a junior college transfer. So back-to-back good classes on the offensive line, potentially great. I love Alex Birchmeier. Like I know Javon Williams is rated higher, but I think Birch is going to be a real player. So I'm going to lean 2023 right here because of the numbers, because you've got three guys that are going to start out as offensive tackles. Whether that's the best fit for them in the long run, we will see. But I'm going to lean 2023, even though I really like what the group that they brought in 2022. Phil Troutwine's on fire right now, and there's no real getting around that.
Tight end, another position that has had, I mean, really just a string of successes, right? I mean, it's not limited to 2022 and 2023. It goes back in terms of their consistency recruiting at that position. But what are you picking between the last 2 years?
Yeah, I'm going to go 23. I don't think it's all that close. Greg had a story on Jerry Cross this week. Definitely check that out on the site. But Andrew Rapelier, that's my guy in this class. I think he's going to be really, really good. And I think Joey Schlaffer is going to be very intriguing to see which way he develops. He's going to have to take the long route around. Definitely a lot of potential there. So 2023, I lean pretty heavily to 2023.
Okay. Big one. 2022 receivers or 2023 receiver? Are you including transfer portal in this?
Okay. That transfer portal is more of a tiebreaker, as we'll see in a different position here. Okay. I'll go 2022 here. Caden Saunders and Amari Evans seem to be leading the way there. We'll continue to see development, and there's a new wide receivers coach in town. So we're going to see which guys develop into his guys. So I think that that's something there. And on the other side, like you brought in one receiver and it was, you know, not a productive cycle for Penn State. They brought in Carmelo Taylor. Whereas on the other side, you've got those two guys. You've Tyler Johnson, who, you know, is going to take some time to catch up and, you know, join his peers on that group. And then Christian Driver switching over, I think is very interesting because I think he's got a lot of the skills. Does he have the skills and athletic combination that you need to be there? We will see. But he's got the genes. So you got to give it right. Got to give it to 2022 here.
Defensive tackle, big position for Penn State.
Yeah. Yeah. Big position. And you see kind of what I was saying earlier in terms of the worry in numbers here, because last year you brought in Caleb Artis and Zane Durant, two guys that they think will be players. But like, you know, this is a situation, this is another one of those positions where if you bring in four guys and two of them hit, you feel okay about it. Maybe like three of those guys to hit. I think they just need more numbers. Like there's a difference between some at times they've brought in bodies that weren't up to this level. And you've seen that, like you've seen the guys that have left the program early. It's tough because you've got this line where you can take guys like Zane Durant, guys like Artis, and then like, are you taking the project that is bigger but not as athletic? Are you taking the guy that's athletic but doesn't have the great measurables? You know, it's such a tough position to recruit.
Yeah,
but it's such a vital position. So I go 2022, and I will say this: Tariq Blanding's not bad. Like he's a sleeper, like pointed out as by James Franklin as a sleeper, pointed out by other people in the program as a sleeper that's worth watching. Now he's about 265 pounds right now, so he's not ready or close to ready to playing. That is a position which, you know, 2024 you need addressed. You need to be honest with you anymore. You need one of those big guys to be in your lap to start. You need one of those guys to be in your region to work on from the start, or else they're heading south.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Defensive end. What do you got?
This is where it gets close. The last four positions on defense, like the classes were so close. Like I have this as a push. You've got Denai Dennis Sutton versus Jamil Lyons, Joseph Mupoy, and Mason Robinson. The numbers obviously favor 2023. But like, do you account for Chop Robinson in this class, in that 2022 class, because of the portal? You alluded to it earlier. I mean, I'm such a big Denai Dennis Sutton fan that I think it's close enough. Yeah, I think it's close enough with just him. Lyons, I think, has the talent. He's going to take some time to grow into the college lifestyle, the college atmosphere, academics, all that kind of stuff. Mupoy is a multi-year project. Mason Robinson's going to take some time to get bigger. While I like the class, I do lean 2022 just because the top of that, you know, Denai, if you list all these guys out, Denai Dennis Sutton is at the top of that list, and I think it's by a healthy margin.
All right. I'm seriously interested in this one because of the standout All-American that they have at the position. But linebacker, what do you got?
Yeah, this was another push for me because you've got Abdul Carter and Keon Wiley going against Tony Rojas, Tamir Robinson, Kevion Keyes, and maybe Dakari Nelson. Strengthen numbers on one side, but kind of like we just said with Denai, like Abdul is so much higher than everybody else. And that's not a shot at anybody that just came in the 2023 class. I might lean 2023 here because it's a more complete class, and we haven't really seen a ton from Keon Wiley so far. You know, he had the sack in the Rose Bowl. He's a guy that we never expected to contribute as a freshman. He needed this offseason to get bigger, to get stronger, and to get where he needed to be. Rojas, very athletic. Keys, athletic on the outside. Tamir Robinson, really, really good football player coming off an injury. And maybe Dakari Nelson's the tiebreaker here as an eventual Sam, just because he is so big and so athletic. They're going to play him at safety. Like they're going to start him at safety and see which direction he goes in the nutrition program and things like that. But I'm going to go against my better judgment and go 2023 here, even though Abdul Carter is just so far above and beyond anything that we really saw coming.
I'm going to bet on your better judgment and be the better judgment and say, always go with what you know. And you know that Abdul Carter is an absolute stud. Cornerback.
2023. And I have questions about 2023's cornerback class, but I feel like that they are just a little bit like, from what I've heard about Elliott Washington so far on campus, like I put him up there with Cam Miller. Cam Miller was the only corner that signed in 2022. Zion Tracy, athletic kid. We'll see what he does in that group. But yeah, that's going to be tough because you don't know how corners are going to react until they get out there. Penn State seems to like what they have in Cam Miller. they seem really pleased with the early returns on Elliott Washington. And I think both are good classes, but yeah, I have questions. I will go with 2023, barely in this one because strength in numbers and it's an athletic group.
Okay. And last but not least, the safeties. Yeah,
I'm going to push safeties as well. You got Winston and Flowers from last year going against King Mack, Dakari Nelson, and Lamont Payne. To me, it's 2-2. It's Winston Flowers against Mack and Nelson. Although Mack could be a corner nickel guy, play him in that Daquan Hardy role and see how he does. I'm going to go with 2022 because I'm a KJ Winston homer. And that's kind of...
Aren't we all?
Yeah, I think so. That's kind of the lane that I've carved out for that one, even though, yeah, I think that Nelson can be very good. It's just got to find his best fit. Like which safety position works? Is he that third safety that plays that star role, the Sam, or is he a Sam? Or, I mean, is he eventually a Will? This kid is huge. He's pushing 6'3", and might be over 6'3", 190, and he can run. So this is a different breed of athlete than we're used to seeing up north. And I'm excited to see how it goes. But like I said, I think KJ Winston can legitimately push for a starting job this year. So can't ask for much more from a true sophomore.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Okay. Well, that wraps up our stacked classes lightning round. I don't know how lightning it was, but we got through it.
It was a good time was had by most. So
yeah, I had a great time, Fitz. Anything else? We're probably wrapping this up and get on out of here. But anything to send us off into the next week?
Not really. If you noticed my Twitter, I did put out a tweet earlier today. Celts, if you've ever been around a tailgate, whether that was when I was at 24/7 or On3, Celts is like the best dude and he needs help right now. So if you go back to my Twitter, you can find a link to a GoFundMe. So definitely check that out because he is a kind and decent man and worthy of the help. So I would appreciate if you have the means to help him out. So, but other than that, I think we're golden.
Yeah. This is the one time where we will absolutely prioritize that over liking, subscribing and notifying yourself about Blue White Illustrated's content. He's a great guy. I've gotten to know him over the years and certainly an outstanding person that we have in our message board community. So with that, that's it. I'm Nate. He's Sean. This is Blue White Illustrated Daily Edition. We will catch you guys.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.